Аншул Саксена. Пепел и звезды. Part 1. Threads of Fate. Chapter 1. The Girl Who Was Overlooked. The Silver City Market never went completely to sleep, even in the dead of night. When the lamplighters extinguished their last lights and the guards nodded off at the gates, something still lived here, quietly, cautiously, almost without a sound. Shadows glided between the empty counters. Cats hunted rats among the abandoned crates. The smells of the day, fish and spices, hot bread and horse manure, were still there. They only grew more muted, mingling with the night's dampness and smoke, and transformed into something special, the scent of a city that sleeps but never dies. Elara Wayne knew this market by heart. Every chipped pavement on the main alley, every place where the cobblestones give away and you could twist your ankle in the dark. That corner by Myra's shop, where even at midday there is a shadow. A good place to stop and look around without attracting attention. 23 years of living in one city is almost like being part of its architecture. Elara had long since ceased to be a city dweller and had become something of a landscape element. Familiar, unnoticeable, necessary, like a drain pipe or an old lamppost at the intersection of two alleys. The merchants knew her. The guards nodded in the mornings, not because she was important, but because they recognized her the way they recognized their own courtyard. The children of Myra Alley sometimes asked to see star charts. The apothecary from Third Street bought dried thyme and sage from her, paying fairly and asking no questions. No one asked why she had black eyes, completely black, without pupils, like a sky without stars, and why she sometimes paused in the middle of a conversation and looked slightly past her interlocutor, as if she saw something over his shoulder. This suited her best. Air is not touched. Air is not interrogated. Air is not burned in the square for too keen a glance or too strange a gift. Around midnight, she stopped by Myra's shop, pretending to examine the bunches of dried thyme. The bunches hung upside down from a ceiling beam, tied with twine, just like last year and the year before. Myra never changed anything. She was one of the few constants for which Elara was quietly grateful. In fact, she was looking at the threads. The threads were everywhere, always everywhere, from birth. Thin, almost transparent, they glowed with that special light visible only to her black eyes. They stretched between people, between things, between houses and trees and cobblestones. Silvery ones, fate, the path of life, what was already planned. Golden, softly shimmering, love and affection, a bond that cannot be broken without pain. Green, like moss, friendship, trust, long years together. Red, sharp and living blood, danger, imminent violence, or imminent death. Most people didn't see the threads. Elara had seen them since birth, and had long ago come to the only possible conclusion. It wasn't a gift. It was a curse. A beautiful, unbearably detailed, completely unnecessary curse. To see the true structure of the world, all its connections, and interweavings. All its little tragedies and joys written into an invisible fabric, and yet never be able to rest from it for a second. The threads didn't disappear when she closed her eyes. They were there in her dreams, too fuzzy, quieter, but still there. Lara couldn't remember what it was like to simply see people without that luminous layer above. The thread between her and Myra was gray, neutral, businesslike, habit, no intimacy, no hostility. A commercial relationship that had grown into a kind of mutual recognition of existence. You are here, I'm here, we both do our part. Do you want thyme or not? Myra muttered, not looking up from her knitting. The needles moved with the mechanical precision of someone who's been knitting for 50 years. I'll take it. 2 bunches. 3 nickels. Yesterday it cost 2. Yesterday was yesterday. Myra looked up for the first time. Small, sharp eyes under heavy lids. Prices are different on Wednesday. And Lara didn't argue. She added a coin, put the herbs in her canvas bag, and was about to leave. That's when she saw the red thread. Scarlet, pulsating. It wasn't coming from the crowd, or from any of the merchants. It was coming from the north, from beyond the city wall, cutting through the cold night air above the rooftops, and pointing straight at her, and Lara, like an arrow fired at a precisely aimed target. The red threads signify different things. Dark burgundy, old blood, the past, an unhealed scar. Bright, shimmering scarlet, a present threat, a living and approaching danger. What she saw now was precisely the latter kind. A living thread, moving. Someone was following her. She didn't run. Running is panic. Panic is noise. Noise attracts attention. And attention is the end of that small, safe life she'd so carefully built all these years. And Lara just walked faster. Not so fast as to be noticeable. A little faster than usual. The pace of someone trying to get home. Not someone being chased. She weaved between the stalls, cut through Mednikov Alley, narrow, with perpetually rotten boards underfoot, smelling of copper and acid, and emerged onto Malaya Rynchna, passing through a gateway known only to her and the cats from the tannery. She crossed the courtyard where the Kravtsov family lived, the one she'd brought their children medicine for last year, when their children had fevers. The red thread didn't disappear. She grew brighter. Whoever was following her was getting closer. They knew the city or had a good sense. Most likely, both. Elara entered her house. It was narrow, 3 stories tall, squeezed between a laundromat and a drugstore on a street with a single streetlight that was out more often than not. She slammed the door, lowered the bolt. She placed her palm on the wooden surface and stood there for a few seconds, feeling her own heartbeat against her ribs. Then she pulled herself together. It was one of the few skills her curse gave her. When you constantly see someone else's fear and pain in color and form, you learn to control your own. Otherwise, you'll drown. Elara breathed evenly, counting to 10. She looked at the threads in the room. The green one for the books. She'd long since stopped laughing at that. The golden one for the dried flower in the clay vase that Katya, the girl next door, had brought her 2 years ago. No red thread inside. Only the one approaching from outside. Three knocks on the door. Heavy, confident, not angry, just the kind that doesn't ask permission. The kind that are used to the door opening. Lara picked up a knife from the kitchen table, a small bread knife with a wooden handle. Utterly useless against a mage, but better in hand than out of it. She opened the door. There was a man standing on the threshold. No, the word was too ordinary. A presence stood on the threshold, filling the doorway before she could even take in the details. Tall, two heads taller than her, and she wasn't short. He wore a black cloak without insignia, the hood pulled back. His hair was the color of a raven's wing, tousled by the wind. Cheekbones seemed carved from dark stone. His mouth was set straight, not smiling, but also not hostile. And the eyes, blue, not ordinary blue, blue like the center of a fire when the flame burns brightly enough, blue like the sky in that brief moment before dawn, when night has not yet departed, but no longer has power, blue like something very old and very deep, for which there was no simple word. Elara looked at its threads and stopped inside. Gold and black at the same time. Intertwined so tightly that it was almost impossible to separate them with a glance. The gold of love and living warmth, and the black of that special shade she saw only in people who carried something very heavy inside, and had been carrying it for a very long time. Not evil. She could distinguish evil black from heavy black. That was the second thing. She had never seen such a combination. Elara Wayne, he said. He didn't ask. He named it, the way they call things that have already been found. His voice was low, even with the slight hoarseness that comes from people accustomed to speaking quietly, confident. They'll be heard anyway. I'm Kindar, a slight pause, the Lord of Ash. I know who you are, Elara said. Then you know I didn't come empty-handed. He didn't move. I need your help. You were looking for me at night, to ask for help. My days are busy. It was said completely seriously, without the slightest attempt at humor, and that's precisely why something in her, despite itself, relaxed slightly. People who mean harm usually try to appear friendly. This one didn't. Come in, Elara said, stepping aside. Hands where I can see. He entered without arguing, holding his hands, as she dusked, at his sides, palms out. That, too, was information. Chapter 2. Transaction Price. Her living room was small, 4 steps from door to window, 3 from wall to wall. Kindar filled almost the entire space. Not because he was physically too big for the space, though that was true, but because everything around him seemed drawn to him, like iron filings to a magnet. Elara found herself standing slightly further from him than she would from a normal person. An instinct honed over the years. Keep your distance from anything too intense. He surveyed the room, methodically, without pretense, simply taking note. Bookshelves lined three walls, a mismatched assortment, old and new, some with marked pages, and scraps of paper with notes sticking out. Bundles of herbs hung from the ceiling. Thyme, St. John's wort, lemon balm, lavender, five varieties of mint. A small desk covered with herbarium leaves, notes, and an inkwell with frozen streaks. A star chart above the desk, a large one, stretching almost from floor to ceiling, hand-drawn on several sheets of paper, taped together, with notes, diagrams, and numerical notations. He lingered on the map. Silver Nebula, he said without turning around. You've mapped all seven constellations of the Northern Belt. Most maps only show four. Most of the maps are inaccurate. And Lara placed the knife back on the table, pointedly, so he could see. Sit if you want. The chair is by the window. He sat down. The hard wooden chair was clearly designed for smaller people. This didn't seem to bother him. Tea? Asked Alara. No. Then tell me why you came. He spoke briefly, without preamble, without attempting to soften or embellish. The Lord of Light, the official on the opposing side, in that long simmering war, which both sides called a confrontation, and neither called what it truly was, had kidnapped his sister 3 nights ago. Lyra Dar, 18, a young mage with the gift of water, whom he had hidden years ago, away from the court's political games, placing her in a relatively safe place on neutral territory. They had taken her at night, without warning, without explanation. She was reportedly held in the Constellation Tower. The Tower of Constellations, Alara repeated slowly. You know what it is. Everyone knows what it is, she sat down on the edge of her desk. The tower stands at the intersection of two worlds. You can't enter it the normal way. The passage opens only through the star threads. Exactly. Kain looked at her. I spent 2 years looking for the person who sees them. The pause is long, like a minute before a thunderstorm. How do you know about me? Alara asked. Her voice came out even. It was an effort. Information costs money. I have money. Who else knows? Her gaze from under her black lashes was direct and appraising. He realized what she was really asking. Only the person who told me. A slight pause. He won't tell anyone else. Why? Because I asked him not to tell. A pause behind which there was something more, but he didn't formulate it. I know what you are thinking. No, I didn't kill him. I paid for his silence, not his death. Alara looked at the threats. The black within them didn't pulse like a threat. It pulsed like heaviness, pain, not cruelty. What do you offer in return? She asked. Protection. As long as you help me, no one will touch you, your home, your people. He said this matter-of-factly. Afterward, documents, clean ones, a new name, a different city if you like, or money. What if I refuse? She asked this question deliberately. She wanted to see the threads when he answered. Then I'll leave. My sister will probably die. you leave, quite calmly. I don't force people.